Madison, Wisconsin is as good as it gets if you are like me and you love the college sports.
This is The Jump Around with Jim Rutledge and Riley Auk. Streaming live on the ESPN Madison YouTube channel and the ESPN Wisconsin app.
Dancing down the sidelines, and they catch him now! The Badgers answer instantly. There will be no undefeated champion on Wisconsin with an unbelievable stretch drive to the championship game.
It's over. The Wisconsin Badgers win 17-9. They are the first Big Ten team ever to win successive Rose Bowl games.
That is the best college sports town in America.
This is the Jump Around, a Badger-dedicated show live on the ESPN Madison and the ESPN Milwaukee YouTube streams. I'm Jim Rutledge alongside Riley Yauch. We got Dimps.
Woo!
Owen Dimple behind the glass in the Everlight Solar Studio. And Riley, I'm just going to get right into it because the Badgers going undrafted for the first time since 1978. That's not a random stat. That's a canary in the coal mine. That's a
little
red
less
flag.
Than ideal.
This program made its name on putting guys in the league: offensive linemen, linebackers, running backs, defensive ends.
Did you say linebackers?
I said linebackers.
Yeah, okay, yeah,
if I didn't, quarterbacks they put in too. Now they're not doing that to the point of record levels. I am 46 years old. I was born in 1980. The Badgers were bad for like the first 14 years of my life. Mm-hmm. Yet they didn't go undrafted in the NFL since 1978. It's a bigger problem than just one bad draft. They've been trending this way, Riley, and that's why I am freaking out today.
Yeah, I'm not freaking out. I feel like I rarely freak out. Maybe right. After the Maryland game, the Iowa game last year,
you freak out in a good
out.
Way. You freak out in a good way.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yes. I try to spin it, and I was really, I was scrounging. I was like, how do I spin this?
Yes.
I got to be able to find a way to spin this positively, spin this optimistically, and I got nothing. This sucks. This is terrible. It's an indictment on where the program is at. I wouldn't say our title of the episode is this rock bottom for Wisconsin.
No,
I wouldn't say this is rock bottom all time. You look at 1989, they went 1-10.
Yes.
Somehow they had someone drafted from that team, I guess. But I would say that is rock bottom of all time. But it's definitely the lowest Wisconsin has been in 30 years, which is not where you want to see the program at.
No, and let's hope it's rock bottom for the modern era. Like, let's hope this is the bottom. The optimistic take on this is that this is the worst it's going to be.
Yep.
That these incoming freshmen from the state of Wisconsin, some of the transfer portal guys that have been brought in, they're going to show up for the Badgers. And they're going to start going to the NFL for the Badgers. If the Badgers feel like they have loads of NFL players on the roster and they just didn't all go out next year and they have nobody or one player drafted, that's a different story. But I look at this roster and I'm not like, all right, there's like 5 to 8 possible draft picks over the next 2 or 3 years. No, that's not it. And Riley, this is what I wanted to do. So I got here in 2008, but it was basically the start of that season. So the 2009 NFL draft was my first year covering this team. And I just want to say that this is not just calling this a portal issue is, I think, an easy way out. So I want to first lay this down. This has been a descending program for a while prior to Luke Fickell. So you can make a case that Luke Fickell had more to turn around than maybe he thought. But I just want to start with this, and maybe we can get some college football music or something rolling, Dimps, where I can kind of talk about who's been drafted in the NFL. And Riley, you just say yes or no if you've heard of these players. Because I think a lot of these guys are pretty good. Matt Shaughnessy.
Yes, have heard of him.
He was a third-round pick. DeAndre Levy, that same year, third-round pick. And then you had Craig Urbick. Pittsburgh Steelers. He actually had a pretty decent career, I believe. Third-round pick. And then Travis Beckham, third-round pick.
Oh, yep. Definitely know Travis Beckham.
Then you have 2010, Garrett Graham and O'Brien Schofield.
Okay, I know O'Brien Schofield. Garrett Graham, not so much.
He was a pretty decent tight end in the NFL for the Texans. Speaking of the Texans, the following year, two first-round picks. One, J.J. Watt.
Obviously.
The other one, Gabe Kareemi.
Yep.
A second-round pick in Lance Kendricks.
Yep.
Third-rounder in John Moffitt.
Okay.
And then Bill Nagy in the seventh round.
Yes. Seen him at practice past couple weeks.
Yes.
Yeah.
And then you go to 2012. You probably see him there because he would have been overlapped with Brady
Ewing.
Yes.
Yep.
So 2012, first rounder Kevin Zeitler, and then Peter Kahns.
Yep.
All right, then you got third rounder Russell Wilson.
Obviously.
Fourth rounder Nick Toon.
Nick Toon. Loved watching him play. See, now this is getting to my childhood memories of watching the Badgers.
Fifth round Brady Ewing.
Yep.
Sixth round Brad Nortman.
Wow, hey.
All right, 2013, first rounder Travis Frederick. Then Monte Ball in the second round, Ricky Wagner in the fifth.
Okay.
2014.
Consistency.
Yes.
Consistent.
2014, not as high of picks, but some good players picked there. Dez Southward, third round. Chris Borland, third round. James White, fourth round. Jared Abadaris in the fifth round. Bo Allen, seventh round.
Yeah, and I feel like, not to interrupt, but that Wisconsin was pumping out these third through fifth round draft picks that would go on to have long, productive NFL careers.
Yeah. Bo Allen, Super Bowl champion. 2015.
James White should have been Super Bowl MVP.
Yeah. 2015, thin class, but a high-performing class. Melvin Gordon, first round. Rob Havenstein, second round.
Yep.
All right. 2016, Joe Schobert, fourth round. Derek Watt, sixth round. Now it's getting, okay, a little bit less there.
Yep.
2017, TJ Watt, Ryan Ramczyk, Vince Beagle.
Now we're back.
Yeah, three guys there. 2018, these are all lower picks. This is kind of where it starts to be like, okay, maybe we're worried here.
What's going on?
Fourth round, Nick Nelson. Fifth round, Troy Fumagalli. And then fifth round again, Natrell Jamerson. Mm-hmm. Sixth round, Jack Sitchi. Seventh round, Leon Jacobs.
Okay.
Then 2019, you got volume, but the rounds are slipping
now
a little bit.
Yeah. The quality is going down.
Third round, Michael Dieter. Fifth round, Ryan Connolly. Fifth round, Andrew Van Ginkle. Fifth round, David Edwards. Okay, sliding down a little bit there.
Van Ginkle definitely has and is still one of the better linebackers in the NFC North, having a good career.
This 2020 bounce back year, Jonathan Taylor, Zach Bond, Tyler Biadasz, Quintus Cephas.
Well, that's when it felt like for the Badgers. You had that down year Pinstripe Bowl after 2017, and then you come back, you go to the Rose Bowl, and it's like, okay, that was just a blip, and we're fine. And it hasn't been the same since.
All right, another lower round picks here. Isaiah Loudermilk, Richard Wildgoose, Cole Van Lannen.
Yeah.
That was 2021. But then 2022, volume, Leo Chanel, Logan Bruss, Jake Ferguson, Matt Henningsen, and Fayon Hicks.
Yep.
So, all right. Then 2023, this is kind of the last banner year. Joe Tippmann, Keanu Benton, Nick Herbig.
Yeah.
And then 2024, fourth round is the highest pick, Tanner Bordellini, Braylon Allen. Last year, hanging on by the skin of their teeth, the Badgers got in their 2 seventh-rounders and Jack Nelson and Hunter Wohler. So the numbers have been
Graham
sliding down
Mertz
the draft.
And Tim Ray DK drafted before Badgers last year, which was nuts.
Yes. So it's been on a downward trend there, Riley.
Mm-hmm. I would agree. And I think I'm stealing this from Jim Polzin.
Okay.
But Luke Fickell has to be both Don Morton and Barry Alvarez. He has to be both coaches. Now, he inherited, even if he inherited a program that was on a downward trajectory with Paul Christ in those final years, he has now bottomed out, hopefully, where Wisconsin football is. 4-8 season, no draft picks. This is the bottom. Now, he has the opportunity to be Barry Alvarez. He has the opportunity to take this program out of the mud and bring it to heights we have not seen before. And he has the belief of the players in the locker room. He has the belief of former players in Nysir Forkurine, which our fans will hear coming up a little bit later. So I think, for as bad as it is right now, objectively, this is a golden opportunity for Luke Fickell to now take this team to where we wanted and thought he would take it when he first got here.
Wisconsin got caught between two eras.
Yep.
The program they built and tried to continue was a version of college football that doesn't exist anymore. You can no longer show up and be like, we'll make you great. This was their edge. We'll make you great over 4 years. Three stars to the NFL. They're doing that. It's just other teams are getting the guys. Like, there were Badgers drafted, but they were former Badgers.
Yeah, lots of Badgers drafted. Lots of Wisconsin high school products as well in this year's draft.
So, like, Badgers are still getting in the NFL. They're just not getting there with the Badgers. So, this idea of give us 4 years and we'll make you great, but guys are leaving in 2 or 1 year, you can't sustain a program like that anymore. And I think anyone trying to grasp for that, I think it was a little bit of Luke Fickell of still trying to grasp of this, we're going to develop.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like maybe 20, 25% of your roster you can develop. But at this point, I look at like development of players who are brought in as kind of the hit rate of a former walk-on. Mm-hmm. Like, and the Badgers hit with walk-ons, But there's going to be 20-25% of people you're going to be able to maybe keep year in and year out on your roster, without a doubt. And then the rest is probably going to either be incoming freshmen or portal players of people that are going to be leaving and coming in. And so you have to rely on your ability to identify ready-to-play talent that maybe it needs more of a fine-tuning than a full-on development. Mm-hmm. And so that's where Wisconsin has to find out what they're made of as far as recruiting, because that's the only way the program's turning around. And we've talked to Mark Tauscher about this on Jim, Matt, Molly when we asked Mark Tauscher, like, hey, is it a concern that no players are drafted? He said, yes, it is, because you have to have NFL players if you want to be competing. Ohio State, what do they have, 27 guys drafted in the first round? I mean, like, it was insane. And so that's not going to get easier or better for them.
Mm-hmm.
And so the Badgers have to figure out a way to find the new version of what they were doing. Before it was, give us 4 years, we'll make you great. Now it's, you got to find something else. Give us 2 years. That could be the new version of it. But you got to find a new way to find that market inequality, that money ball way to at least be respectable. Because I'm sorry, the last 2 years, 2 seventh-round picks, no players drafted, and missing the bowl game twice is not respectable.
No. And especially when a school like East Carolina has a draft pick. It's like several schools. Northwestern had 2 players drafted. Like several schools that have no business being in the same conversation as the Badgers.
And Riley, you and I agree on this. If the Badgers had won 8 games and nobody was drafted, there's not
who
much
cares?
Of a care.
Yeah, who cares? Washington had 7 players drafted. The Badgers beat them. Then you're like, okay, I don't give a rip. Like, we're winning games.
But we just tracked the downfall of top draft picks to overall draft picks to the downfall of the program.
From top draft picks to late round draft picks to no draft picks. But I think that's going to change moving forward. And you mentioned the adaptation, the turning this into the new way of how Wisconsin used to operate, but that still works in the NIL era. And from the players I've talked to at spring practice, I think they're trying, and I think they're starting to find a footing in that regard. You have the players that you brought in that you're developing in your Mason Posas, your Cooper Catalanos, your Cairo Skanes, your Jameer Scotts, and then you supplement that with transfer portal players, your talented Colton Josephs, your Javon Robinsons at cornerback, Bryce West from Ohio State, and that's how you do it. Because I remember talking with Charles Perkins. He's a transfer, and he was here last year. He entered the portal, then decided to come back because he believed that Wisconsin was the best opportunity for him to get to the NFL. He told us that specifically. He wants to get to the league. That's his dream. And Luke Fickell, the coaching staff, sold him on the promise that if he came back to Wisconsin, this would be his best opportunity to get to the NFL. So they still want to get guys to the NFL. And I think if you have that nucleus of your guys, the young guys you can develop, like your walk-on hit rate, like Wisconsin used to do.
Yep.
But then you supplement that with a majority, almost, or at least a third, a good chunk of guys that are talented transfer portal players. And if Wisconsin starts to win, then the level of players you can get starts to jump up a little bit.
Right, because players, no matter what you tell them, until the door is closed, and we're going to talk to Nizer Forqueen, as you mentioned, a little bit later in the show, and in his NFL dream, the door is cracked. Mm-hmm. He has an opportunity there. Until that door is shut and locked, you assume you have a chance to go to the NFL. And so if you are a player in college football, you want to go to a program that, at a bare minimum, cares about getting you to the NFL, and at least Luke Fickell has some NFL success prior in Cincinnati, and the University of Wisconsin has NFL success and still NFL players playing. But honestly, I think this is some of the stuff that struggles with Badger basketball. Mm-hmm. They don't turn out a ton of NBA guys and not a lot of premier NBA guys. And so if you want to be someone who goes to the NBA, the Badger basketball team is probably not what you want. It's different in basketball because
there's so few draft picks.
Right. And with the European side of it, like, you still can compete without the draft picks, and there's only 2 rounds. Because if we played, like, if we did this game with Badger football and outside the first two rounds, this is not the first year.
What, you got J.J. Melvin?
Yeah, it would have been. They would have missed the first 2 rounds. They didn't do it in 2022. They didn't do it in 2021. They didn't do it. Oh, they did it in 2020. They didn't do it in 2019.
Jonathan Taylor?
They didn't do it in 2018. So, like, yes, to your point, if we went on those rules, the Badgers would struggle similarly in football. But turning guys to the NFL is, I think, very important. And Riley, actually, we can just transition right here into, you're not going to tell me who these players in spring ball are going to be going to the NFL, but is the talent better as we get to our spring wrap-up?
Yes, and I have three big takeaways now that spring practice has concluded. I was able to go to just about all of the practices except for maybe two or three, and I now have three big takeaways for you from Wisconsin spring practice. Number one, you ask about talent. I think Wisconsin is a significantly more talented team in 2026 than they were in 2025. Colton Joseph, I think, is the prime example. Even though I was talking about last week, he's been inconsistent. He's a little unpolished right now as a quarterback. The talent level compared to Hunter Simmons and even Carter Smith and probably Billy Edwards, it's not comparable.
So what do you mean by unpolished?
So he, like I mentioned last week, he's fumbling snaps, and it's the lack of consistency so far with Colton Joseph that I think is the biggest struggle and the biggest concern as a fan and a journalist perspective, even though it doesn't seem like the coaching staff's overly concerned. It seems like coachable things. It's consistency specifically with accuracy. He completed less than 60% of his passes last year at Old Dominion, and we've been able to see that in spring practice. And it's gotten better over time from where he started to where he finished, miles better.
Okay.
But he'll still have sequences where he'll scramble out of the pocket, make a beautiful throw for a first down. Next play, he airmails a guy. And it's like, okay, I'd like to see that dialed in a little more. On the short routes, the short patterns, he's very consistent. And you can tell he's also getting more comfortable as a leader, too. The coaching staff said that Kenny Guyton, the quarterback's coach specifically, said that the pressure may have been getting to him a little bit. Wisconsin's a large step up from Old Dominion.
Yep.
He is meant to be the face of the program here. That's a sort of a new role for him with all the public-facing stuff he has to do. And I think that weighed on him a bit. And now, as he's gotten his sea legs, so to speak, underneath him, you can tell he's really starting to embrace that role and gotten a lot better. But there's still room for growth, to be sure.
Yeah, and look, college numbers say he's not an accurate guy. Doesn't mean he can't get there. But I just glancing at his numbers, it looks like last year he had, what, 34 total touchdowns and 10 interceptions. I don't know how many fumbles were in there, but you'll take that ratio. And even as a freshman, 22 touchdowns to 5 interceptions, total, you know, including rushing and passing. So he's a guy that will make plays, and if he can kind of tighten up. But some guys just are going to be a little bit loose with the ball.
Yeah.
Snaps are needed. The rest, accuracy you can live with. Snaps are needed. And accuracy, I think, is one of those things where when you have to pay the consequence a little bit more, then he'll adjust to it. I do believe he can be good. But Ryan Hopkins?
Ryan Hopkins.
I asked you about him
last week and even just since last week, Ryan Hopkins looks damn good.
Okay.
He is an exciting player to watch. And I think I bring up that leadership aspect with Colton Joseph. The most exciting thing about him, aside from the raw talent that you can very clearly see when you watch him play, is that Kenny Guyton said he's a leader. He's a natural leader. He is bringing people along with him while still competing for that backup job. And he's going to be competing with Deuce Adams, Carter Smith, Danny O'Neill when he comes back. And the fact that he is still able to be a vocal presence in a room where he is the youngest guy while also showing that he can ball out on the field is impressive and gets me pretty pumped about what he could be in the Cardinal and white.
All right, before we move to clip of the week, who else kind of surprised you?
Yeah, so I guess quickly, my other two big takeaways were that the second-year players are going to make a significant impact this year. Luke Fickell brought it up specifically. Your Mason Poses, Cooper Catalano, obviously. But earlier I brought up Jameer Scott. I talked to Nizer about him. He's really talented. He looks good. You have Matt Young in the secondary. He's a senior, but his second year at Wisconsin.
He transferred from a small Old Dominion, was it? Or a smaller school?
He's transferred from Bethel College, Division III.
Quarterback is Old Dominion.
Yeah, and he had to step in for an injury. Preston Zachman last year against Alabama, so obviously not ideal.
Right.
But he's taken a big step forward. Nick Clayton at linebacker looks really good. Cairo Skanes and Eugene Hilton Jr., obviously. He had a kick return for a touchdown in the special team scrimmage. Dude is fast. Oh, he's going to be a game changer. And number three, defense is still going to lead the charge. The offense, I think, will be significantly better than it was last year for Wisconsin, but this is going to be a defensive oriented team, and the defense still was in firm command for the majority of spring practice, outside some of those Saturday practices where the offense had a good day. And honorable mention, offensive line improved significantly.
Fantastic. All right, let's get to our clip of the week.
Around these parts, there's only time for the best of the Badgers.
We don't know exactly where we are right now.
Why don't you own the Wisconsin football team?
We need to play better significantly.
They're spoiled rotten.
This is the clip of the week on the Jump Around.
Go someplace else. Go boo in a bar.
All right. Well, our clip of the week is Greg Gard on K&B earlier this week. Let's hear Greg Gard.
The NCAA tournament. Just your takeaway.
I think it's good. You know, I know people out there will say, well, it'll water it down. It's made for coaches, job security. You know, we've expanded about every other sport you can think of. College football has expanded. It's probably going to expand again. Major League Baseball's added the wild card. The NBA's added the midseason tournament and an expansion. NFL's added wild card playoffs games and gotten more teams involved. I think it's good. We need to continue to grow the sport.
Riley?
I love Greg Gard. I don't know if I agree with him that it's objectively good because it's growing the sport. And how exactly is it growing the sport other than giving more opportunities to mediocre Power Four schools to get into the tournament?
Well, that sounds good. I like that.
I'm just saying, I want Wisconsin. I'm glad. If we're being honest, it's going to help Wisconsin. On down years, they're going to have a much better chance to make the tournament. But are they going to make a run when they're 13 and 17 in the Big Ten? Like, come on. Like, this isn't going to help mid-majors. We all know that.
This hurts mid-majors because, like,
so
a lot of
the... So how is it growing the sport?
A lot of those conference programs that...
Money.
Right. No, I agree with you because my understanding of this is that it will be the smaller conference title winners that will get bumped into the play-ins. And so instead
of... Yeah, which is... exactly.
And then it's worse because there was that special moment where you'd see these teams win the Sun Belt Conference and they don't know they're going to the tournament, and it's the real tournament. I for me, the real tournament's always going to be 64, and I think the NCAA agrees as well because they call the other ones play-in games.
Yeah.
And this kind of feels like these are going to be play-in games as well. So those schools that are smaller have to work harder to even get in, and let's just not pick on Wisconsin this time. It will be the truly mediocre, like an Indiana
Auburn, SMU. Yes, yeah. From this past season.
And you had plenty of bites at the apple to get there. It'd be different to me if it was, hey, let's take the bottom 20 teams in and let's throw them in like a randomizer and they all play each other and see who gets going through. That would be at least somewhat fair and give these teams a shot that if you truly are a better team, then go out and win. It still makes life harder. Like as I look at like someone at FAU got the automatic bid. They were great, but and they were a higher seed, so that's not why they got in there. But if you start playing, making it harder and harder for those teams to get in, they have to work harder to even get to the actual tournament. And so, I mean, to get further in the tournament. Like there could be years where, those other VCUs and others that they have to win an extra game, extra two games to be able to get to the championship.
Yeah, I didn't even think about that. Are they going to funnel all the 16, 15 seeds into those stupid play-in rounds, rounds?
That's what I would imagine they're going to do.
Yeah, I didn't even think about that. I still assumed all the automatic qualifiers would get into the field of 64, and maybe I haven't read up enough about this. I need to look into it a little more. But that would be absurd.
I'm sure that's their overall plan.
Shuffled all the mid majors to weed them out before you get to the 64, and then you put in your Indiana at an 11 seed or a 12 seed instead of a mid major. I would hate that.
This is TV dollars, and as much as like the college basketball sickos love the idea of some of these mid majors making a run, Indiana's got a large alumni base. Auburn's got a large alumni base. They will travel. They'll watch the game.
Yep.
It will matter.
And ultimately, it just dilutes the product as a whole.
Yep.
I feel like it just is in a downward spiral of quality basketball being played when you add all these teams who don't really deserve to be playing postseason basketball at that level.
Mm-hmm. And I feel like this is just going to lead to more and more chalk. We've seen the tournament over the past couple of years be incredibly chalky. This isn't going to change that.
Nope.
Not, I don't know. I get where Greg Gard's coming from.
Yeah.
As the head coach of a Power 4 school.
Yeah.
But I don't think I can't get on board, but this is a good thing.
All right, let's get to the Twitter portal.
It's time for the Badgers Twitter portal.
All right, guys, taking a look into the Twitter portal. First up, semi-viral. No, I would consider it viral. Tweet on the ESPN Madison X account right after the NFL draft when we released that no badges have been taken since 1978. In the replies, we have... Oops, sorry. One second. We have from Sean Musinski? Sure, we'll go with that. At Barstool Barcat, coming to save them with NIL money and backers. My question to you guys is... Is this a problem that you can just throw money at to solve it?
It helps. Now, I want to point this out, and look, Big Cat has more ways to provide than the Badgers do, but you need, like...
You need big donors.
Big money, because, like, what Big Cat's talking about, at least a little bit, and I'm sure he's got personal money given, it would be kind of what you've seen different beer companies do, where a percentage of the profits would go to UW. I don't know how much Stella Coffee does, how much volume it does. It's still very helpful, and the Badgers should take advantage of it and be very thankful for what Big Cat's going to do, and all Badger fans should be very thankful of it. But, like, you need the CEO of Fortune 500 companies to believe in what's happening. You need to figure out more brands that are on a national level that be willing to spend with Wisconsin. And just a side little note, as I'm coming in today, Duke gets a deal with Amazon. They're gonna
have three
exclusive games on Amazon from Duke.
Oh my gosh.
Exclusive
and
rights.
How much money is that gonna pump straight into the athletic department?
Right now nobody's calling the Badgers to be no pro like nobody's billing after exclusive rights to their games, so it's just another revenue stream. It's looking a little bit like more like Major League Baseball. Like the Yes Network and all those sorts of things.
Yeah, your regional broadcasting networks.
So, yeah, money is the root of all evil, but also in college basketball, greed is good. You need a lot of money.
Yeah, I think it's definitely a problem you can solve by throwing a lot of money at it, but you also need the right people in charge of that money and distributing that money. Like for Big Cat... Do we want the Stella Blue money? Yes. Do we want his Pardon My Take money? Yes. But you know what could be more impactful? Him promoting Badger season tickets or something on his podcast, on Pardon My Take, on Barstool. Like, have Big Cat at every Wisconsin football, basketball-related event ever. Build up some goodwill. Give these Fortune 500 CEOs, give these people, like you say, the WIFM all the time, Jim, what's in it for me? Like, have these personalities, have these people go out and sell your product to bring in the money.
We talked to Pat Richter a couple weeks ago, and he said, like, you are in customer service.
Yes.
In the athletic department, in the fundraising department. And so you have to have people on call. If there's someone who's a Fortune 500 company or someone who's got big-time bucks and they love Big Cat and Barstool, well, then, yes, you tap Big Cat and say, hey, can you come out to a dinner with this guy? Can you do a chalk talk with these people? Can you do these things? And then that is the extra little whiff them. What's in it for me to go and do this as opposed to keeping the money or spending it somewhere else? So, again, remembering for the athletic department and those in the NIL that you are in customer service. People... Their money is not a given to come to you.
Yep.
You have to go out and earn it and keep earning it.
All right, moving on to the next one. We have from Brandon Tim. There were draftable guys, but when you don't win, you stifle their chances. Tanner Koziel and Skylar Bell getting drafted definitely sends a message too. Until Wisconsin starts winning again, they're considered a stepping stone to a more winning program. Do you guys believe players view Wisconsin as a stepping stone program?
Okay, let me jump in on this. Yeah. We talked about this on Saturday Scramble a few weeks ago. Like, yes, the Badgers are a stepping stone program objectively to some players, like Preston Zachman, I forget the offensive lineman who went to Indiana.
Joe Brunner,
yes.
But
Blackwell going to Duke.
That was more of like he didn't feel wanted here as much. So like,
yeah, it's different.
Yes.
So yes, right now, sure, but and if you win, that will change, yes. But bringing up Tanner Koziel and Skylar Bell as your examples of that? No. Skylar Bell went to UConn.
Yep.
Yes, he had a great stint at UConn that led to him getting drafted. Yes, I admit that. But come on, saying that, the Badgers want to go to winning programs. I'm going to go to UConn? Maybe for basketball, not for football. Or Houston? That's where Tanner Koziel went.
Also
what was
basketball
Houston record?
Over football.
Yes, exactly. Yeah, sure. These football players going to basketball schools. But I just don't agree with how he framed that argument whatsoever. And I don't think the Badgers are that much of a stepping stone program.
In basketball, they are. In football, no. Mm-hmm. I agree with you. And those are bad examples. I can't think of a lot of examples. You named a couple, the kid going to Ohio State. But like in general, it's not players like, I need to go play for a bigger school.
Mm-hmm.
If there's a fault, then there is a fault here. The Badgers aren't either recognizing the talent or aren't coaching the talent in a way that they want to be coached. Like Tanner Koziel smoke around the idea that maybe he didn't love Wisconsin's philosophy here, how they were going to use him or any of that. Well, that's on Wisconsin for recruiting a guy who wouldn't maybe like all this or not making him feel more welcome. It's on Wisconsin for not maximizing what Bell could be. And like, so for me, I look at if these guys that leave and went pro somewhere else, they more left for the opportunity.
Mm-hmm.
And then it's like, well, who couldn't you beat out here? Why couldn't the Badgers figure out how to use you more? So if I'm going to be critiquing the Badgers for guys going to other schools or going to the NFL, it's for the Badgers not recognizing you have to model your system around the players, not your players around the system.
Yeah, I think if the argument is the Badgers coaching staff didn't utilize these players correctly, fine. You can make that argument. CJ Williams, another guy, wasn't that great at Wisconsin, went to Stanford, got drafted. But these are all lateral moves. They're not going. Will Pauling went to Notre Dame. I'm looking at his stats. Maybe these are for his pro stats. I can't find any stats.
Keontae Lewis. Like, who do you go to Oklahoma? Who's the kid who went to Oklahoma, ran into the wall?
Keontae Lewis.
Yeah, Lewis. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, like Will Pauling's one of the only guys I think you can make the argument.
Yeah.
He went to Notre Dame. Yeah. That is a step up. That hasn't really happened a ton with Wisconsin football.
All right, moving on to the final one. We have big news around college football. The quarterback, new quarterback of Texas Tech, maybe not playing a single snap for him, but Brendan Sorsby getting caught with some gambling. Says he placed more than 10,000 wagers and at one point averaged 20 bets per day. I want to ask you guys, is this a problem in college athletics? Or is this like a tip of the iceberg kind of deal?
Yeah, yes. I guarantee. Throughout my time in school, I didn't know any athletes who gambled, but that's because I wasn't that close with many of the athletes. But all of my friends in college, I knew so many sports gambling addicts when I was in school. I still know a ton of sports gambling addicts. So actually, I shouldn't have laughed. I respect Sorsby for going to get treated and getting the help that is required, because that is a very dangerous thing and a dangerous addiction. So I guarantee this is definitely just the tip of the iceberg, and I would not be shocked if we see over the next few years lots more of these stories pop up, and eventually it could, I feel like there's too much money in it for it to go the way of like smoking and the advertising surrounding smoking. But
I think you're onto something though.
That feels like it could
be
that direction.
Maybe the advertising, but, and I know they have like a little slap thing they throw on at the end, like a financial advisor sort of stuff. But like, I think there's going to be more, I guess in this case, virtual Surgeon General type warnings.
Mm-hmm.
In theory, there's a lot of layers to this. Like, there's no consumer protection anymore. That's been gutted. So like, I don't know what will actually exist, but in a perfect world, there needs to be a pop-up, something that's reminding,
a barrier.
There's something there that's telling you, like, one more step, you don't make that impulse thing, or something's going to be there virtually as a barrier, as a reminder of the seriousness of it. And I think college programs are going to have to take it seriously. I think you could do things like at some point in the NFL where there's treatment for drug issues, and if you're caught, and I think that's how you're going to have to treat this, because this is the issue of gambling, like drinking alcohol or marijuana, these other things, like, in and of themselves, for the large majority of people, you can do it responsibly and recreationally. But then there are people, because of usually because of some sort of mental disorder, that they are prone to addiction, and they are going to gambling, alcohol. These things are things they're going to get addicted to. So you have to treat gambling the same way you treat those other things that people get addicted to, like drugs and alcohol. And you have to set up systems in place. If you're going to allow, you allow obviously the advertising of alcohol in games, and so you can allow gambling. Mm-hmm. But you have to figure out a way to then provide a support system and barriers for those players and for people gambling on the games, honestly.
Yeah, and for someone, I enjoy a little sports gambling from time to time. I get a kick out of it. I don't do it a ton because I suck at it and lose a lot of money.
Yeah.
But as someone who enjoys it, the way sports gambling and the advertising surrounding sports gambling has become so ubiquitous in our culture, I'm really not a fan of that. And I just don't like what it encourages and what it cultivates. Because even if these guys aren't throwing games necessarily, it's still having, it's got to have such a negative impact on your psyche. Even, let's say you bet on yourself, you don't hit that. You're not only costing your team because you didn't succeed, you're also costing yourself money. Like, right, it's just so weird. It's just like so weird.
Anything else with addiction, you're not in, when you're in the throes of addiction, you're not going to be in the right mental state.
Exactly. You're not in the right state of mind. Like, I've gotten so pissed when I've thrown $5 on the Brewers to win and they lose, and I get so mad. Yeah. Like, it's not good, objectively.
And then you're chasing the high. Exactly. There's a mental dopamine hit to this whole thing. Like, there's a lot to it. So I think that's the first step, is that professional sports and collegiate sports are going to have to understand that punishment is part of it, but treatment needs to be the other part of it if you really want to be able to have these athletes be around something that's so ubiquitous around them, but also you want to keep that money.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Is that the last one?
Yep, that was the last one.
All right. Well, let me tell you about Steinhoffels. April, today's April 30th, so you just, today's the day to do it. April is Sleep Awareness Month. Invest in your sleep. The body deserves, and get $300 in Steinhoffels cash with a Tempur-Pedic mattress purchase. At Steinhoffels, experience the unmatched comfort and support of Tempur-Pedic mattresses designed to adapt to your body and help you wake up feeling refreshed. Upgrade your sleep experience when you add a smart base that automatically adjusts to snoring, because better nights lead to better days. Celebrate Sleep Awareness Month and sleep better. Relax. It's Steinhoffels. Nizer Forkereen coming up next.
The Memorial Day sale is on now at Steinhoffels. The perfect time to create your outdoor oasis so you can enjoy the summer with family and friends. Steinhoffels 60-month 0% financing can make getting your dream patio set more affordable. Save 10% or more store-wide, plus get amazing deals like a panel bed just $3.99 and this sofa only $4.99. Steinhoffels Memorial Day sale. Shop in-store or online at steinhoffels.com.
The Jump Around continues. I'm Jim Rutledge alongside Riley Yauch, and we are thrilled to be joined by Nizer Forkereen. And Nizer, I want to just start with this right away, is that your story is, it's not just football, it's courts, it's systems, it's not what you went to school for, it's not what you went to go play football for. So I'm just going to ask it straight up. Do you feel like the NCAA in the long run failed you as a student athlete?
I mean, yeah, I would definitely like to think so. Obviously, losing my year right before the season wasn't ideal at all. But at the end of the day, it was a situation where I knew I could be in that type of situation. That outcome could have happened. So it was a little bit my fault, but I think they could have definitely helped me out a little bit, compromised and made something work with me to at least get me on the field or let me know ahead of time. So a little bit in a way.
Yeah, it was definitely a tumultuous situation for you, to say the least, but I know that you had the opportunity to work with the scout team to grow and essentially be a player coach for the younger guys. So what would you say for you, what was the biggest positive out of that experience for you as a player and a person?
Like you just said, it kind of just being able to be a player coach and be around those guys while at the same time not really taking a full toll on my body as of the season, like playing the games and everything. So I think I came out healthy. You know, if I would have played, you never know, I could have got injured and not been in this position I am. So I think just growing as a person, growing as a player, and growing as a man. As a player, I learned more about football. I was able to spend more time with the coaches, Coach Haynes, learn under him a little bit more to grow my game and just build myself as a leader as well by being able to coach those younger guys, try and give back to them what guys have given back to me and what I've learned. So learned a lot about myself, and especially as a person and as a man, the adversity. I've been through a lot of adversity in my life, but this never with my career. You know, this is something that I've dedicated my whole entire life to. So being able to persevere through that, continue to attack each and every day and show those guys that you can, you know, attack whatever's ahead of you and you can only control what you can control, and that's your mindset with everything. That's where I grew a lot. So
your patience had to be tested a lot. No timeline, no answers, yes answers, then no answers. And then at some point you decided, I'm done with this. What was the reasoning why, and how tough of a decision was that for you?
Yeah, I mean, at that point, there was like two more games left. So I think we were going into, Illinois? It was one of the last two games. I can't remember exactly which game. But at that point, I was like kind of stringing it along a little bit. There was only two games. The light at the end of the tunnel. At the end of the tunnel kind of started to go away for me. So I kind of just wanted to do that for my teammates. You know what I'm saying? Just kind of trying to let those guys get more and more reps as they could. It was a little bit later in the season. But just trying to let those guys, you know, grow as much as they can and not take as many reps away from people, even though I was on a scout team. So it just felt like the right time to do that.
How did Wisconsin, I mean, Riley kind of touched on it, but how did the university support you, though? The coaching staff, the athletic department, and the actual, just the university. How was that support for you? And obviously, it seems like it was pretty good.
Yeah, that was amazing. Honestly, I couldn't have done it without them. They presented this whole entire thing to me back in, I want to say, December of last year, January of last year, before I even went through with it. But they were through my side the entire way financially. And most important to me, just allowing me to be around the team. You know, a lot of guys, if I got that strip from me and they weren't letting me practice and act as if I was with the team, travel to all the games, be in all the meetings, it could have did something to me mentally. You never know. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
So
yep.
For them to just be around, let me be around and be interactive with the team and just grow as a person. And like you said, as a player, stay around the game of football and keep on sharpening my skills, even though I wasn't playing those games, helped me a lot for both my career and just my mental as a person. So I can't thank them enough.
And clearly you sharpened your skills enough where you were picked up by the Los Angeles Rams. So yes, congratulations to you. That's amazing. What was that process like once the season ends and you're prepping? I know you had been talking with the track coach about getting your 40 time up. How was Brady Collins involved? Just walk us through, for someone who has no idea what that's like, what was the experience for you, and how did it end with the phone call from the Rams?
Yeah, no doubt. So, I mean, back in December, obviously, you're trying to pretty much the whole season, you're trying to figure out where you want to go to train. And I knew that I wanted to stay around town. Probably I had my lease up for a couple more. I had my lease until the end of April. So I kind of wanted to try and find something around here that was a little bit cheaper. And I also had two of my past teammates, one guy from Grand Valley State and one guy that went to Mentor with me. They came and lived with me so I could help them out. They came from smaller schools. They weren't in the position to necessarily financially train at some of those top spots down in Florida where you might see guys go. Those are very expensive, you guys don't know, like maybe $16,000 for 2-3 months.
Wow.
Yeah, okay. Definitely did not know that.
If you don't, and it's for 2 months, they have everything included. It's top notch is why guys go down there. But if you don't have the agent that's covering those type of things, it might be hard to go to those type of places. But so I was able to help them out train down here. But yeah, like you said, I mean, honestly, it's just figuring that out. Just trusting and believing, having my faith in God and having my faith that it was all going to work out, which I knew it would. You know, all I wanted was opportunity. So I had that faith that even though I missed a year, I feel like I put a good enough film 2024. And my whole thought process was attack this pro day to the best of my ability and show them what I can still do. So, yeah, you talked about it. I ended up training out here. Coach Russo and Coach Brady, they trained me for my bench, my upper body lift days. I would go there, and then I actually went to – TAP, the Total Athlete Performance in Verona. There's a Verona location, and there's another one in Windsor with Zach Campbell and those guys up there, and they did a great job fixing my agility, working on my speed and everything. So I was supported by a lot of great guys in this process, and once that pro day came up, I killed it. I did my thing. I didn't run as good as I want to do, but you can always improve in so many different aspects. So it went very well for me. Obviously, I'm grateful that it came out this offer and this opportunity at the end of the day. So
how did you start to realize you might get that opportunity to get with a team, you know, during that pre-draft process, as the draft got closer, right after the draft? Like, and how many teams were interested in you?
Yeah, so throughout the season, I know I was talking to Coach Gillen, my chief of staff, and he was telling me teams had still been coming in to look at me every single day at practice. They were coming in, so I was attacking those practices hard, trying to put my best film on tape type of thing, just because I know that that's the only time they're going to get to see me throughout the year. So really attacking that, I didn't get to talk to any of them, but he was letting me know that, built my confidence up, like, oh, I'm still on the radar, just keep attacking. Then once January came, I didn't really hear much. I talked to like two teams at my pro day, and then I'll say like literally 2 weeks before, my agent was putting in work, calling teams and everything, but like not until probably 2 weeks before my pro day did I mean 2 weeks before the draft did I start really hearing from teams. But the Rams were the team that were most involved with me for sure. I talked to them a lot of times, talked to their cornerback coach, their medical staff, the week leading up to the draft. But that was the team that was heaviest on me. I had a few other teams. There's probably five teams that were reaching out about me and stuff, but the Rams were definitely heaviest. So
yeah, you mentioned those conversations with the Rams cornerbacks coach and whatnot. What do those conversations entail? And have you gotten the chance to talk to Sean McVay or anyone else higher up on the staff? What does that look like?
Yeah, so I have not talked to Coach McVay yet. Okay. I'm looking forward to it. I'm looking forward to it when I get down there if we don't talk before then. But definitely introduce myself to those guys right away when I get down there. I'm super excited. Great, great young coach that I feel I can relate. They have a great team over there. Great opportunity for me to be able to make the team and just join such a good team that been doing good these last few years. So it's a blessing. But as far as the conversations, the corner coach has just called me and the scouts. First off, is my adversity. Obviously, you can't deny the fact that I lost this whole season. So that's one thing that they definitely pretty much supported me about. Like, let me know. Like, a lot of people wouldn't have done this. A lot of people would have walked away, would have quit, wouldn't have been able to go through the whole season. So they definitely applaud me for that, and I appreciate them. I had a lot of different adversities in my life with my family, so throughout the years, and I just kept on persevering, kept on going straight, just full head of steam ahead, pretty much. So they definitely applaud that about me. My just how relentless I am in my game, my versatility on the field, just those different things. So they definitely love me as a player, and I'm blessed for this opportunity. I'm excited to get down there to get to work.
And how does this timeline work now? Like, so what are you doing now, and when do you get out to LA? Like, how does it all work for you?
Yeah, so they fly me out May 7th. That's when we report. I think pretty much those first few days, we have a lot of physicals, a lot of medical stuff, staff just making sure – medical stuff, making sure we're okay to get going. I think – I'm not exactly sure the full schedule just yet. I think May 8th to May 10th is like a rookie mini camp. Again, it's kind of acclimated to the system and everything, but right after that, we get going with the veterans and everything, so I'm excited.
Yeah, best of luck. And you mentioned you've personally dealt with a lot of adversity, obviously, last year, lots of adversity, and bringing it back to the Badgers, the whole team dealt with a lot of adversity last year, going 4-8. But I was watching one of your previous interviews, and you said, despite the adversity, last year's team was one of the most connected groups that you've ever been a part of. Can you elaborate a little bit more on that? And how does that happen, even amidst such a difficult season on the field?
Yeah, I think it just comes with the guys in the locker room, just believing. You know, in that first year, 2023, I would say a lot of guys in the locker room didn't believe. Even though we had a better record, I just don't think it felt the same in a way. And even 2024, I feel like we had a lot of quit in earlier games. Like maybe I remember after we lost to Iowa that 2024 season where we got blew out away. That was horrible. Guys took it in the wrong direction. I think that kind of killed our momentum for the rest of the entire season. We just didn't come to play. So I think this year, even though we were losing games, I think guys were connecting. I think we had a lot of leadership throughout that room. Darrell Peterson did a great job. And then there's guys that lead by example, just guys like Mason Ryder. Guys look at players like that and really gravitate towards them. And then there's young guys that are still in the team, like Mason Posa and Coop. You guys know about those guys, and you guys see the potential on the field. But I think what they do in the locker room, even though they're freshmen, guys gravitate towards that. You know what I'm saying? Those guys didn't maybe have the most opportunities at the beginning of the season, but when we started losing, these guys started to rise. These guys started to get better, and you guys started to see these guys show. And it makes you think, like, oh, they should have been playing from the jump. But even more than that, I think just that they're mental. You know what I'm saying? Obviously, they're hungry. They're freshmen. They haven't stepped on the field. But I think guys can relate to that, and guys can look at that and get motivated. Like, oh, these freshmen are coming in and balling. And I think just you can see that we had more life. I think we had more life, even though we were losing games. So I think that's a good thing to know, that things are trending in the right direction. And hopefully this year the Badgers can get back on track and get back to where they used to be.
Yeah, as you kind of start your NFL career, have you had a chance, or are you hopeful that you'll get a chance to talk to some of those Badgers who have been in the NFL? Rob Havenstein has played for the Rams. There's been players, whether it's in front offices or as coaching staffs. Chris Orr is a linebacker's assistant with the Chiefs. Like, are you starting to get brought into that Badger alum sort of NFL window there?
Yeah, definitely. Any opportunity I get to talk to those type of guys is a blessing, especially the Badger guys. Those guys have obviously walked the same path I have just ahead of me. So if I can follow in their footsteps, guys, like, actually, I'm really close with Muma Najang Mehta. That's my guy. His last name is hard to pronounce still. Yeah. But Muma's my guy. So I try to reach out to him a lot. I was reaching out to him a lot in this entire draft process, just kind of hearing what he's done, how he's taken things, and especially because he went undrafted. I'm definitely going to be reaching out to him in one of these next couple of days just to see. He went from undrafted and made the 53-man roster his rookie year. So me being able to learn from him. And I actually was working out a few days. I was working out at Next Level in Waukesha with TJ Watt, Jack Nelson, some of those guys, Chimray DK, some of those guys. So talk to them a little bit about some certain things. But yeah, absolutely. Any opportunity I get, I'm going to be at it for sure.
Yeah, those are some good guys to talk to, that's for sure. Is there anything you learned from TJ Watt specifically? He's been an all-pro defensive player of the year. I understand you play different positions, but is there any nuggets or pieces of advice you picked up from him?
I think the biggest thing just working out with him was seeing how he worked out. It kind of puts into perspective if the way he attacks his workouts, there's no doubt him. It's no coincidence that he's going to be one of the greatest to ever play the game. He attacks workouts like no other, and it makes you think, like, if you're a guy that, for me, if I went undrafted, if this Hall of Fame guy can do this thing, I can do it. And I say that because he kind of has, not that you would ever chill, but he's kind of accomplished so much, and he's still going so hard. So it makes me think, like, oh, if he can attack these workouts like this, I can attack these workouts like this. So I think just his mentality and how he just attacks stuff. He doesn't say much. He didn't say much when we were lifting. He was just at it. Like, he's pushing the guys around him. He's just attacking his workout. You can see how badly he wants it. So it makes you motivated for sure.
Last thing I have for you is, what is your fondest memory of being a Badger?
I would probably just say the guys in the room, just all the locker room talks, all the travels to away games, all the wins and even the losses, just how much we grew together. I've met some of my best friends here, guys like Ricardo Harmon, Amari Snowden, guys like the AJ Tisdale, guys that might not have been here for not even a whole season, maybe one season, or have been here their whole career. So it was just a blessing to meet so many great people and be around such a great traditional program. And the fans, too. Madison's a very welcoming city, and they have so many great people here. And it couldn't have went any better. It blew my mind, honestly. It was better of an experience than I thought it was going to be. So
I do want to say that speaks a lot to you, but obviously the teammates in the program, the athletic department, and the fans, but to you to say, like, I don't regret it. It was amazing because I think there's a lot. It's not anyone's fault here in Madison, but there's a lot to regret because of the NCAA. And you still took that attitude. I think that really speaks a lot.
No, for sure. I appreciate that. And that's the dead honest truth. I tell people all the time, I do not regret it. Like, I would want 100 out of 100 times, I would go through the exact same process because obviously I know what I know what could have happened. I truly believe if I would have played this year, I would have dominated. I would have been a draft pick and a high draft pick at that. I truly do believe that because of how much I grew from 2023 to 2024. But that growth from 2024 to 2025 was even more. And you guys didn't get to see that, so it's all say. But at the end of the day, like, I truly do believe that. But even though it didn't go the way we wanted it to, like I said, I learned so much about myself that's going to take me way past this football field. And I feel like I influenced so many guys on this team in so many different ways, just being around these guys. And like I said, showing them that I wasn't even out there playing, and I was attacking these practices like you would have thought I was playing the next day. I was going that hard, and I was trying to show these guys, no matter what, you just attack what you got to do. So it was a blessing.
Yeah, I know, me personally, echo what Jim was saying. Obviously, we didn't get to see you last year, but I'm taking you at face value that you would have balled out and dominated last year. But
I appreciate that. Of course.
I have two more quick ones for you about this coming year's Wisconsin football team. One small picture, one big picture. Coach Haynes and then the new cornerbacks coach, Robert Steeples, said that Jameer Scott was the most talented natural cornerback they have seen step on the football field. You got to watch him play a little bit last year. You got to see him work. Do you agree with that sentiment? And what do you think Jameer can do this coming season?
No, I do agree. Jameer is a great guy, great competitor, and a fierce competitor at that. I think the thing that stands out to me most about him is his ball health mentality. I think he's a guy that's going to make a lot of turnovers. Obviously, last year we didn't have that many turnovers, and the year before we had even less turnovers, I'm pretty sure. And I think that he's a guy that can change that completely. He's going to go get the ball when it's in the air, and he's not going to back down from anybody. I'm so excited to see what he can do for you guys this year. I know he's going to do great things, and I know he's hungry. I know that for a fact because I know last year redshirting hurt him, but I try to tell him each and every single day. I try to mentor those guys and tell them, like, redshirting is a blessing. Even though you might not be on the field, everybody wants to transfer out right away if they're not playing right away. It's a blessing. You're at a Division I program. You're able to learn under the starters. You're able to get those meals, be in those meetings, and lift with those guys and just build yourself. So when you hit that ground, you can when you hit the field, you can hit it running. And that's one thing that I know he's going to do. He's going to come out there. He's going to compete. And I'm excited for what he's going to do. He's going to have a great year this year. I'm very, very excited for him.
Yeah, I'm excited to see it. Now, last one, big picture question. I've been talking to a lot of players, specifically players who decided to return to Wisconsin this coming season, and it seems that they are all, the common thread is that they're all bought in on Luke Fickell as the head coach of the Wisconsin Badgers, whereas a lot of fans are really not bought in on Luke Fickell as head coach of the Wisconsin Badgers. So as you, someone who was recruited by him, who's lived it, what's something maybe fans don't see or don't understand about Luke Fickell? What makes him a great coach and a coach that these guys believe in and think that he's the dude to turn it around?
I think that obviously you would think that a coach cares, but I don't think you guys understand how much he does care. Obviously things haven't went the way we would have wanted or he would have wanted, but he definitely does care and he cares a lot. I know that each loss, each time we don't win, each time he disappoints, each time he underperforms or we underperform, he takes that to the heart. He takes that on him. He doesn't blame it on any of the guys that are on the team. He doesn't blame it on his coaching staff. He takes it on him himself. And losing, obviously, he has a historic winning record with in his high school wrestling days. I don't think he lost at all or whatever it may be, but he hates to lose. Like, he truly does hate losing, and he'll let you know that. You can feel it just being around him. And he's going to do anything in his power to get this program back to where he wants it and where it should be. So that's the one thing I'll say is how much he cares. We know that. We see it. I have no doubt in my mind that he's going to change this thing around this year. So,
well, Nizir, we appreciate the time. And when you're on Monday Night Football or Sunday Night Football, just make sure to say Wisconsin Badger when you get that.
I got you. I appreciate you guys having me on. It was a great time.
All right.
Of course. Thank you.
All right. This has been the Jump Around on ESPN Milwaukee and ESPN Madison's YouTube. Just kidding. I'm back. All right. weird how we change so quickly,
I know.
Too.
It's rapid fire.
Yes. So, Owen, can I now say this has been the Jump Around?
Go ahead.
All right. That was Nizir Fourqueen. He's a fine young man. Riley.
Truly.
Owen, I'm Jim Rutledge. This has been the Jump Around on the ESPN Madison and the ESPN Milwaukee YouTube channels.